Okay, guys, if we could get settled in, ready, phones away, please, and other devices. A very, very special zuchus for me personally and for the yeshiva, as I told my shiur this morning, and I'll tell everyone else, Rav Sobolovsky and I go way, way back to ninth grade in Riverdale, New York, where Rav Sobolovsky and I were classmates. And put it this way. I won't tell you which one, but one of the two of us was head and shoulders the top of the class. Head and shoulders. Both in the learning department and in the secular department. I'll give you another hint. One of us was the best basketball player in the class, and the other one of us was the biggest matzmen, best learner, secular, and Torah. I'll leave that for you to figure out. Rav Sobolovsky and I also have the schus of spending our summers together, and he's a tremendous, tremendous marbitz Torah in Yeshiva University, in his kehila, throughout the country, on YU Torah, and it's a tremendous, tremendous schus to have Rav Sobolovsky. Just to give you the schedule, he's going to say Divrei Torah on Purim. Then there'll be a session to ask some questions, and we'll be davening Mincha Mir Tashem at 12:40.
One of the reasons why I always like coming back here is I always like that introduction. Not the head and shoulders part, but about it brings us back to when we were kids. There is a very strange mitzvah that we fulfill on Purim. The mitzvah is called Kriyas HaMegillah. What is so strange about Kriyas HaMegillah? It doesn't seem to be more strange than the other mitzvah that we do. What's strange about Kriyas HaMegillah is that we do the exact same mitzvah twice, which is really something which is startling. We do not find, at least by most mitzvahs, say for example, comes to Neres Chanukah, we don't light the Chanukah candles at night and then relight them in the daytime. Maybe I'm sure we do that, it's a minhag. Or when it comes, let's say for argument's sake, to the mitzvah of shaking a lulav and esrog, we don't shake it first at night and then do it again in the daytime. We don't blow shofar first at night and then do it again in the daytime. Yet it comes to Kriyas HaMegillah, the Gemara tells us in the beginning of Masechet Megillah, Chayav Adam Likros HaMegillah Balayla L'Shnosa Bayom. We are obligated to read the Megillah at night and then to read it again the second time around. And the words of the Megillah seem to be pretty much the same, nothing radically different about the Kriyas HaMegillah at night versus the Kriyas HaMegillah in the daytime. All right, maybe a few more kids in shul, a little more bouncing around Muhammad at night. In the morning, guys are on the way to work. And okay, maybe a little bit different picture. But fundamentally, halakhically, it seems to be pretty much the same. So what is it all about? Why do we repeat the Megillah a second time? What makes this question even more powerful is the source that Chazal give for repeating the Megillah twice. Chazal quoted Pasuk that doesn't even seem to talk about the Megillah. The Gemara calls Psukim about a person davening at night and a person davening in the daytime. That's very nice. I'm all for davening Shachas Mincha Ma'ariv. What does that have to do with Kriyas HaMegillah? What one sees clearly from Chazal is that there is a dimension of Kriyas HaMegillah of Tefillah. There's a certain Tefillah, there's a certain dimension of davening that's taking place in Kriyas HaMegillah, which really requires of us to take a step back and understand what is this about Kriyas HaMegillah that's tefillah oriented, and why is it that this particular tefillah must be repeated twice? There is a fundamental machlokes that we've shown him about what exactly tefillah is all about in the Torah version of tefillah. There is a mitzvah midaraisa la'avda b'chalavavchem, we say it every day in Kriya Shema, aveda shebelev, we're obligated min ha-Torah, one of the Tariq mitzvahs is to daven, la'avda b'chalavavchem. When are we obligated to daven min ha-Torah? So there is a machlokes to Rambam and the Ramban. The Rambam's opinion is that every day a person is obligated to daven min ha-Torah. Now, again, true min ha-Torah, you don't have to daven three times a day. And min ha-Torah, you don't necessarily have to daven in a minyan. And min ha-Torah, you don't have to say the words of Shemon Esri. That's all true. Those are all mid-Rabbanan. But mid-Araisa is a mitzvah each and every day to daven. And the Ramban disagrees even with that. The Ramban says it's not true. That it's a wonderful thing to daven. I'm not advocating not coming to davening. Don't get any ideas here, guys. But says the Ramban, Nida Arai, so you know what tefillah means? Tefillah is reserved for a very specific type of a situation. What's called in Halacha an Eis Tzora. When there's a particular need, there's a particular tzorech. What's the particular tzorech? A person's very ill. A person needs a parnasa. I always say the week of finals, that's a pretty big ace tzara, you know. It's a good plug. How about you come to YU? Don't worry, you can daven the ace tzara, special minyan for you. And by say an ace tzara, when there's a real tzara, a real need, then there's the tefillah min haTorah. Then the Ramban, slightly different context, writes, but there's another type of a tefillah that's also min haTorah. Not the daily tefillah, and not even the tefillah min haTorah, but Hallel is also min haTorah, says the Ramban. You know why Hallel is min haTorah? It's a celebration of a nace. It's a tefillah b'shasimcha. That's also a tefillah d'oraisa. So there are really two different types of tefillahs according to the Ramban and the Torah version of tefillah. There's tefillah as a tzara, and there's a tefillah of a shasimcha. And perhaps that's what's going on in Kriyas HaMegillah as well. Kriyas HaMegillah is also a kiyum of tefillah. And it's a dual kiyum. It's a double fulfillment of tefillah. Because within the Megillah itself, actually the story of the Megillah is the transformation of me'eis tzara to me'eis simcha. Me'yagin le'simcha, me'evel le'yomtov, as the Megillah itself says. The first half of the Megillah is the tefillah me'eis tzara. Dark clouds. There's a problem. There's a tzara. There's an enemy. There's almost an annihilation of Klal Yisrael. There's a tefillah. There's tzelmos. There's tshuva. That's one part of the Megillah. And the second half of the Megillah is a simcha. Not quite howl in the classic sense, but it's a simcha. It's a Yeshua. It's Nisim and Eflos. Come Chazal and instituted Kriyas HaMegillah twice to highlight that we approach a Kadosh Baruch Hu two different types of emotions. We approach a Kadosh Baruch Hu b'layla. The first Kriyas HaMegillah is the tefillah layla. It's dark, but erev yalim bechi. It's a tefillah of crying. It's a tefillah of yes tzara at nighttime when the situation looks bleak. And then we don't stop at that point. We re-daven to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We re-mispal. We reread the Megillah in the daytime. That's the tefillah of simcha. That's the tefillah of Hallel. So within the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah are both dimensions of the Chos Tefillah. There's the Tefillah of Eis Tzara, and there's the Tefillah of Shas Simcha. And the truth is, if we go back, really, to the very beginnings of Hilchos Tefillah, the very, very beginnings, Gemara tells us the beginning of the fourth Perek HaMaseches Brachos, that Tefillah was started actually in the days of the Avos. Avram Tikkun Tefillah Shachris, Yitzchak Tikkun Tefillah Mincha, Yaakov Tikkun Tefillah Arvos. So you find both of these dimensions within the Tefillahs of the Avos themselves. We find that Avram Avinu davened. We find that Yaakov Avinu davened. Let me leave Yitzchak out for a moment. The two, first and the third Av, Avram and Yaakov. Look at the tefillahs that they chose to daven. Avram davened in the morning, Yaakov davened at night. Is that coincidental or is there a deeper reason for this? So if you take a look at the lifetime, the events of Avram Avinu and the lifetime events of Yaakov Avinu, we'll understand quite clearly what each one chose that particular time of the day or night for their personal tefillah. Avram Avinu had a wonderful life. Avram Avinu, the sun was shining on Avram Avinu. He was very successful. He was financially successful. He was well respected by his neighbors. Just look at some of the interactions between some of the big world powers in the days of Avram. Said, even Melch Sdom acknowledged him. The other non-Jewish neighbors, Avimelech, even Paro had to come to the realization that Avram's running the show. Avram Avinu was very well respected. And just look, Tashas Chayesara, what do they call Avram Avinu? Nesil Akim Atav Asicheinu. They recognized, they realized that he was a Nesil Akim, he was a prince of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everybody knew him, everyone respected him, he was famous, he was wealthy, he had everything going for him. He had a wonderful life, Avram Avinu. And as such, his tefillah reflected that. Avram Avinu davened at a time when the sun is rising. A person gets up in the morning, well refreshed, assuming that he went to sleep the night before. That doesn't happen on YU trips, but okay, that's a person is well refreshed, he's awake, he's excited, the sun's shining, it's a beautiful, clear blue sky outside. Wow, ready to roll, ready to conquer the world. And he gets up and daven shachris. That's a tefillah of simcha. Look at the life of Yaakov Avinu. Can one imagine a more sorrow, challenging, difficult life? Yaakov literally goes from tzara to tzara. He goes from being hated by his brother Esav to a father-in-law of a lover, and he has to escape once again with his life. He has tzaras with his daughter Adina, and then he has tzaras of Yosef. Tzara after tzara after tzara, problem after problem after problem. And Yaakov davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. But his tefillah is not a tefillah shachris. Yaakov's tefillah is a tefillah of Ma'ariv, because it's dark outside. It's dark. and it's difficult, and it's exile, and it's golus, and that's the life of Yaakov. And Avram and Yaakov each teach us this fundamental lesson that you have to approach a Kadosh Baruch Hu when the going is not so great, and when things are wonderful, when the sun is shining, and when it's pitch black, and the light of the dark, Shachris Ma'arvis, one has to approach a Kadosh Baruch Hu to daven, to connect, to come close to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. As the Psukim in Tehillim tell us, Sarav Yagidem Sav Hashem Hashem Ekra, and Kos Yeshua says Sav Hashem Hashem Ekra. It's the same phrase, Hashem Hashem Ekra, I approach a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the time of Tzara, I approach a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the time of great Simcha of Kos Yeshua says so. The life of Avram, the life of Yaakov. But there's a middle picture. We left out, conspicuously left out, one of the others. Yitzchok. Yitzchok was neither here nor there. Yitzchok was not quite the Avram in the sense of the sun shining. Yitzchok had his peckle of problems. The Psukim describe, he had a lot of run-ins with the Plishtim. They stole his wells, they stuffed up his wells, they kicked him out of Gerar. Things weren't so great. On the other hand, his life was not at risk. Nobody was keen. He didn't have an ace of running after him. He didn't have a love on pursuing him. He had the Ishmael. They very little bit. They had little bows and arrow fights when they were kids. But you know, for most of his life, Ishmael wasn't running after Yitzchak to kill him. It wasn't the ace of Yaakov relationship. So Yitzchak, he was somewhere right smack in the middle between the Shachris and Avram, the Meir of his son Yaakov. He was a Mincha man. Think about Mincha for a moment. What is Mincha? When is Tefillah? Mincha? The morning's over already. So the strength and the vigor of the morning is gone. The sun's already beginning to set. Depends when you dive Mincha Gedol, it's only starting to set. It's got a long way to go. You dive Mincha Tani, you dive a little bit later, close to Shkia. I don't know, you live in Barpak, you dive already, it's already way after Shkia, whatever time it is. But it's not pitch black. I mean, sometimes it is, but okay, that's off the record. But it's not yet the night. It's a very, very long afternoon. It just takes longer for the sun to set in certain parts of Brooklyn. But it's still the afternoon, but the afternoon is kind of on the way out already. That's exactly what Yitzchak was. Yitzchak was a Mincha man. That was the tefillah of Yitzchak. Yitzchak taught us something phenomenal, an amazing lesson. Yitzchak taught us that sometimes people make the mistake of thinking, when it's terrible, when tragedy's about to set in, I'm standing outside the operating room and Chas Shalom, who knows what's going to happen, it's very easy to say to him. And on the other end of the spectrum, when there's a great simcha, and I'm so happy, and I'm marrying off my child, and I'm so besimcha, but halavodoy, I'm ready to thank Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's very easy to approach a Kodesh Baruch Hu when you live extremes, the extreme of tzar, the extreme of simcha. What is much more profound and much more difficult is to approach a Kodesh Baruch Hu when a little bit of both. When things are not so good and not so bad. Rabbi Sai, 99% of our lives are lives of Yitzchak. Most of our lives are not jumping off the top of the world like Avram. We hope and pray most of our lives are not the tzaras and chayshim and goals of Yaakov. Day in, day out. You know what the life of Yitzchak is? The day of your life of Yitzchak is February 21st. I don't even know if that's the right day. I can never know when I'm in Eretz Yisrael. I never know which time my watch is right. But February 21st, I think, is the day. A regular, normal February 21st, in the middle of Cherev Zman, it's almost as Chosh Adar, it's Nishtaher, there's no great Simcha in the air, there's no great Tzaras going on, Baruch Hashem, we hope and pray. It's a regular, plain and simple Tuesday morning, 12:05, towards the end of morning Seder, Rabbi Sai, that's the challenge of life. That's the challenge to connect to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Chazal tell us that in a certain sense, of all the tefillos, Yizor Adam Tefillas Mincha. Because Tefillas Mincha is the greatest challenge. It's the hardest of the Tefillas, but it's the greatest reward of the Tefillas. Because it's the Tefillah that doesn't have anything exciting or disastrous connected to it. It's just plain and simple, Avedas Hashem, day in and day out. That's Tefillas Mincha. There is a Medrash. It's a very strange Medrash. And it's a very unique medrash because no one knows exactly where this medrash is. It's quoted in a sefer called Ayin Yaakov, which is a compilation of all the different agaritas in the Gemara. And at the beginning of Sefer Ayin Yaakov, he quotes Matsasi b'medrash. He doesn't tell you where the medrash is, and no one knows where it is. And no one, at least I found, knows where it is.
Rav Kasha quotes it in Bereishis on the first pasuk.
But where is it? No, he quotes it from the Abdom of the Ayin Yaakov, but he doesn't say where the Ayin Yaakov got it from. Right, but he doesn't say where he got it from. Yeah, thank you very much. Okay. Rabbi Friedman, okay, there you go.
I know which Medrash it is.
Good, okay. So the Medrash, the non-existent phantom somewhere, secret hiding Medrash, by next year Rabbi Friedman, by the summer Rabbi Friedman, I'll give you a job. Fine for me. Okay. Let me tell the guys the Medrash. The guys are hanging with their tongues out to find out what the Medrash is.
Rabbi Fran quoted the Sima Shas.
Rabbi Fran quoted the Medrash from the Ayin Yaakov, from the Rabbi Kasha, from Rabbi Friedman, from, okay, let me say what it is. You know, the Mishnah says, Oma Dovashim, Oma Mevi Gula Oma. So much Gula, we're going to be overdose of the Gula. So comes the supposed Medrash and says as follows. maybe I'm going to quote a different Medrash, maybe it's not even the one to The Medrash says, what's the pasuk in the Chumash that encompasses everything? Is this right? Is it?
That
encompasses everything. Everything. This is it. If you had to put your bets on which pasuk says it all, which one would you say? So if you would have asked me for a vote on this one, I'd say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Kerem Shemecha. That's Yichud Hashem. That's everything. V'yahavta l'recha kamach is that called Golub Torah? I don't know. Bereishis Bo Elokim. Anoch Hashem Lekecha. I got a lot of possible psukim. You know, it's interesting. The Rambam writes that one is not permitted to believe that any pasuk in the Chumash, so to speak, one pasuk is more kaddish than any other pasuk. The Rambam actually criticizes the custom that most of us have of standing for the Aseres HaDibros. The Rambam says that gives more chashivas to one pasuk over another. Every pasuk is Dvar Hashem. Every single pasuk in the Chumash, every word, every letter in the Torah, Kedushas, Pi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same level of Kedusha. So to highlight this, the Rambam says that the pasuk, V'achos lo tantimna. It's a pasuk tucked away in the end of Parshas Vayishlach. Most people, by the time we get to Shvi, they're not even paying attention anymore about who was related to, from the B'nai Seyir, a guy that's not. V'achos lo tantimna, says the Rambam, that pasuk, those words, V'achos lo tantimna, has the exact same kedushas haTorah as Anoich Hashem Lekecha, no more, no less. And if anyone says otherwise, he's a kofer b'Torah. Achos lo tantimna. So several years ago in YU, they were writing a new Sefer Torah in the yeshiva. And they were trying to sell osiers, they sell letters for the Sefer Torah. So usually as a gimmick, you know, most places when they try to raise money to write a Sefer Torah, so they sell psukim, they sell parsha, sell words. So you know, usually the big psukim go for a hamalacha gold, is a nice, you know, good collector's item. A Seres HaDibros, Shema Yisrael, you know, Vizel Sabracha, you know, anyone that people think is will be a schooler for some parnas or something, so they'll give a lot. So I mentioned to some of my Tamidim that I said, you know, I don't really like this practice of selling different parshas. That it's against this Rambam. It gives the impression that somehow one pasuk is more important than another pasuk. I said, if you would ask me, I said, I would put money to buy the achos lo tantimna. I would go, that's what I would say. I said, just to show that everybody's the same. So my Tamidim, Baruch Hashem, they listen to everything the Rebbe says, and probably 30 guys offered money to go buy the achos lo tantimna. Why? They didn't know what to do with it. So they hiked the price on achos lo tantimna. Those who want to buy those psukim have to pay extra, because some nut said that's the pasuk that you need. So everybody said, that's the introduction to the Medrash. Now to get to the Medrash itself. The Medrash says, what's the most important, quote-unquote, most pivotal pasuk in the Chumash? So Chazal quote one day, one opinion that says, Es ha-keves echa tase b'boike, v'es ha-keves asher tase b'rabayim. You bring a korban talmud every day, every morning and every night. That's the pasuk. I mean, it's a nice pasuk, I have no problem. Hopefully everyone said kabbalos this morning. Usually when I say shir, so sometimes if I'm in the middle of shira, if I'll quote something from the davening, so I'll say, everyone daven shakas this morning, everyone put on tefillin this morning, I give shir at 1 o'clock every day. So I'm expecting a resounding yes to that answer. If I see one guy in the back who didn't put his hand up, so I rephrase the question, I say, did everybody daven shakas? The guy's still sleeping from Byron from last night. So Rabbi Sai, at least he made it to shir though. Rabbi Sai, I said, Kevin Sechot HaSeb HaBoyki, that's the pasuk? You know what the answer is? Rabbi Sai, yeah. You know why it's the most important pasuk? Because it means day in and day out. There's nothing special. There's no grandiose thing happening in the Beis HaMikdash that day. It's not Yom Kippur, it's not Pesach, it's not Sukkot. It's a plain and simple Tuesday morning in the Beis HaMikdash. It's a Tuesday afternoon in the Beis HaMikdash, and you bring a korban tomei, it's like, that's Avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem is not in the grandiose. Avodas Hashem is in the day in and the day out. The commitment to Torah, to Tefillah, to Mitzvahs, Mas, and Tovim. That's the commitment. So Rabbi said, Kriyas HaMegillah is a wonderful mitzvah. It's a gevaldika mitzvah. And there are two parts of it. It connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'erev at the time of Tzara. And it connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time of Beik, at the time of Simcha. But if Purim ends right then and there, if Purim ends with just Kriyas HaMegillah, and there's no follow-up, So then, what we have is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, B'Shas Tzor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, B'Shas Simcha. We have Avram and Yaakov, but we're missing the bridge of Yitzchak. Purim is the beginning, Purim is not an end. You know, they say a joke in the yeshivas that every Zman in the yeshiva ends with a Tainus Tzibur. So Elul Zman ends with Yom Kippur, Kai Zman ends with Tisha B'Av, and Chor Zman ends with Tainus Esther. So it's a terrible joke, but it's true, but it's terrible. No, it doesn't end with the Zman begins with Purim. Right. I'm sure you'll be able to convince the Bachur. The Zman is starting Purim. That's it. From Purim, that's... I remember when I was in... You guys remember from YU, the big signs used to go out. Mishenichas Adem Arav Mesimcha. Used to be big signs around yeshiva that said, Mishenichas Adem Arav Mesimcha, Ein Simcha LaTorah. Doesn't really say that anywhere, but they made it up. Ein Simcha LaTorah. And the minhag is in yeshivas, the most kadmona from the days of old, that's beginning from Rosh Adar until Erev Pesach, one has to learn more and more and more. Now's not the time to learn less. Now's not the time to say, it's the end of February already, come on, I'm going off for Pesach, or I'm finished, I'm shut up bed, I'm already done, it's ready. Okay? There's a lot of time. There's 6 weeks between now and Erev Pesach. There's a lot of learning, a lot of mitzvah, but they're boring days. There's nothing exciting. A day or two of Purim. Well, here, you get 2 days of Purim, whatever it is. You get a little bit of Purim, but Rabbi Sai, the Avedas Hashem that really matters is not the moments of excitement. The moments of excitement are there, and there are times during the course of the year that are supposed to get us excited. And there's a Kriya Sevengillah, and there's a tremendous Simcha, and sometimes the Shabbat sends us challenges in the other direction. But the point of the Avrams and the Yaakovs is to get to the Yitzchak. The point of Kriyas HaMegillah is to get us close to Kadosh Baruch Hu, to connect us to Ribbono Shel Olam, even at a time when nothing special, nothing exciting is happening. So Rabbi Sai, we have a challenge. We have, Baruch Hashem, a wonderful Zman Simcha up ahead. We have tremendous Kol Sashuas Asa of Hashem Hashem Ekra. Hopefully let's use the time of Mishenichas Adar Arba Simcha to enable us to be able to serve Kadosh Baruch Hu even on the boring days, even on the day-in, day-out days. There is no boring days in Avodas Hashem. Everything is excitement. To turn, I can't say to turn every day into Purim. I don't know whether we want that. But to turn the excitement of Purim into every day, that we're able to do. Hopefully we should be Zaycha to be able to, like Hudemais Arv Simcha, Arv Zutaira, be able to take the regular days of the year and infuse them with the spirit of the Kriyas HaMegillah and the celebration. Okay, we'll go for the floor a little bit. Okay, I don't know if you want the, you guys want the tape on for this also. I don't know, maybe. Maybe. We might, okay. I will take the option to possibly turn off the tapes if I feel I want to, depending on what the questions are. I'll take any question. I may not take every question. But that's it. Okay. Usually, our treatment comes up with a big one. Yeah. Oh, back. Okay. 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 Yeah.
Maybe say that all the Torah, second Torah, are the same. What about the descendants of Yaakov, descendants of Esau? Yaakov is much better.
It's not much better. It means I'm talking about the Ramtul in terms of Kedushas HaTorah. That each word is V'pei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Each word, each letter of Torah is Torah Min HaShemayim. There's no difference whether it's talking about Shema Yisrael, it's talking about the story of who was related to who at the end of Parshas Noach. It's all Chochmas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, we may not understand exactly the significance of all the Pesukim in the Torah. Okay, that's our Chisar, not the Torah's Chisar. So do the descendants of Yaakov, is that more important in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu than the sense of Esav? That may be true, but that doesn't detract from what we're saying. That the Kedusha of the Torah, the Torah of Shemayim, is Chal on everything.
When originally you need Basra and Yayin, so when it comes to all Purim with Yayin, there's the opinion that you're not allowed to drink any time throughout the year. And then there's the opinion that says when you're drinking on Purim, you're supposed to drink until you're so drunk that you fall asleep because of it. Like, what exactly is the whole reason? Like, why does Yayin only? Why do you have to get Simcha through Yayin? And if so, like, how much do you have?
Right. So the Mefarsh explained the reason why Chazal instituted the drinking of wine, specifically in Purim, was as part of the Zechel HaNeis. Because the whole Neis revolved around the Yayin, the whole Mishnah Yayin, every other moment in the Megillah happened to Mishnah Yayin. So as a Zechel to that, the Chachamim were masakin the idea of drinking wine. How much is the person supposed to drink for this? So we paskin aloch, there are more paskins, that's what our practice is that one is not supposed to really drink too much, one should drink a little bit and then fall asleep. That's the way I always tell everybody, that's the way the Mishnah Berurah paskins, and that the Lefian is the way they should be practiced today. So you have a little bit, don't take too long to put you to sleep, especially if you're tired. If you stay for the Chagiga late, then you're tired the next day, you take a little drop more. Again, those who are legally permitted to drink, those who are not legally permitted to drink should consult their lawyers about what they're allowed to do. Consult their Rosh Hashivas and their Rebbeim. But those who are legally permitted to drink, so I recommend they should have one cup of wine and they should fall. You should go to sleep. That's what I do.
What is does the Rav think is the best practical response? There's been a lot of talk about the world events, the Dolan being sick, and Iran, and people are saying that we should, people have to do tshuva. And what Rav think is the practical response people should have for these?
We should always do tshuva. Tshuva is always good, Can I say that the particular event of this, the particular event of that? On the one hand, we don't want to minimize, the importance of doing tshuva, the importance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, trying to wake us up. On the other hand, we don't want to get into that kind of a frenzy of, this like a crisis mode. When you're in crisis mode all the time, when the real crisis comes. So I know that, there are many yeshivas who don't, I don't know what the minhag here is, there are many yeshivas who don't like the practice of saying Tehillim after every davening. Because you say to him every day, Shem Alas, well, Maisa, when the real Torah comes, it's not going to mean anything. So we want to be attuned to the fact that we should always use all opportunities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends our way to be Chos Metshuva, but not, not overdo it in the sense of to turn every event into such a crisis. Iran's been around for a while, I was, the other day, somebody, when I got off the plane, so somebody in the airport was saying that, they heard that Iran's supposed to blow up the world on Tuesday. So somebody said, good, it's a good thing on Tuesday because I'm busy on Monday. Again, when you start to talk about something so much, so it loses the effect. So we hope and pray. Ehud Mais Ayin will be a good month for Christ. Yeah. Okay.
So a lot of us have heard many times that Purim is considered a holier day of the year than Yom Kippur, and I was wondering what the basis of it is, and if you indeed think that it is.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word holy in the sense of, the term holy, the concept, that's a halachic concept called Kedusha, Kedusha Sayyom. So Yom Kippur clearly has more Kedusha Sayyom than Purim. Purim has no Kedusha Sayyom. There's no Kedusha to Purim. Purim's a wonderful day. It's a very, very special day. Don't get me wrong. Even if I don't drink too much, I still have a good time on Purim. It's a great day. But it's not Kedusha. Kedusha means when there's an Issa Malacha, so that's a Yom Kaddish. So Purim doesn't have an Issa Malacha, so it's not a Mikra Kaddish. But what the Svarim do refer, particularly in the Sefer Kabbalah, have this idea that Yom Kippur, that Yom Kippur has certain similarities to Purim, and one possible approach, just in the Olam HaNigla, in the world that we can understand, is that a person has the ability to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu on Purim in a way that's very different than Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a day we avoid the entire physical world. There's obviously no bosses, there's no yayin, there's nothing. We're literally like malachim. Whereas on Purim, we have the opportunity to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world with our families together, with our meat, with our wine, with our drinking, with our celebrating, with our dancing. Again, in the right way, in the right spirit, in the right proper manner. But it's really a simcha of Olam Hazeh. And there is a certain mile, a certain advantage of a simcha of Olam Hazeh than a simcha of otherworldly kind of a simcha. There's a famous verse from the Kotzke Rebbe on this past week's Pasha. The Torah says, V'anshe kodesh tiyuli. You should be men of holiness. So the Kotzke said that it says, V'anshe kodesh. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I have a lot of malachi kodesh. I got plenty of malachim. I don't need any more malachim. I got millions of malachim in Shemayim. What I need is, as the phrase, a few good men. I need some anshi kodesh, some anoshim kodesh. I need some people who are men, who are anoshim, who live in this world, but are kodesh. If they know how to live in this world properly, they could live in this world, they could celebrate this world, and afa b'chein, they're living a life of kedusha. That's a tremendous, tremendous level. So that advantage Purim has over Yom Kippur in that sense. So I don't know whether I'd say Purim is a more kaddish day than Yom Kippur. I would say that it has certain opportunities and certain level of Eretz Hashem that you can't even necessarily reach on Yom Kippur.
Rebbe says the sheet of drinking and then sleeping. Drinking is in the context of the
suda,
no?
But that's the question is, how do you, the Rambam's lashon is that you have to be drinking in the suda itself. So the question is, practically speaking, how do you do that? So if you have a suda earlier in the day, so then you drink in the suda, and eventually you fall asleep. But if you follow the minhag that many have of having a suda later in the day, then you run into a problem. So there was a machlokes, the two of the Rosh Hashivas in Layu, Rabbi Shech and Rabbi Willik, about how to solve that problem. How do you drink in the Suda, yet drink to make yourself fall asleep? So Rabbi Shech thought that you could, the falling asleep could be done after Purim's over. He said you can eat the Suda late in the afternoon, as long as you drank. It's a brisket Torah, it's a lomdus. Or for those who were in the Shia before, it's a razzle dazzle, it's a shtickle Torah. That you have to drink enough, it's a sheer of drinking enough to make you fall asleep. Rabbi Willik didn't think that. He thought that the pshat in the Ramah was is that you should drink a little bit before the Suda. But there are two dinim. There's the din of drinking derech ha-Suda, that's part of the Suda's yantif, Suda's sperm. And then there's another din of atlo yada, which can be performed out of the context of the Suda. So he thought you should drink in the morning first a little bit and fall asleep. And then at the Suda you have a little bit more, and you don't have to fall asleep based on that. So the nafkamin ladin is whether you need one cup of wine or two cups of wine. According to Rav Shechta, one cup of wine knocks off both. According to Rav Willing, he said you need the big chumri, you need two cups of wine, spread out over a course of 8 hours. It can be very low alcohol proof wine. So neither one's going to be a great drunk.
First of all, I think Baruch should keep in mind when he wants to do some random question. When he wants to decide what to do with Shana alcohol, he wants to decide what to do with this specifically next year, as opposed to coming back from Shana Bet, or maybe going to even going to Yeshiva University, or perhaps going to secular college. What are the thoughts a person should do with that?
I think that a person who has the opportunity to learn for another year should for sure grab at the opportunity. I think that, a person's able to learn, a person's able to be involved in Limud Torah, life's not running away, so you'll get to college a year later, so you'll get to medical school a year later, but by the time you're 55, it's not going to be enough to mean whether you started college at the age of 19, you started college at the age of 20. It's not going to make the slightest difference. But in terms of your Avodas Hashem, in terms of what you're going to become in life, what your Ruchnius is going to look like, it's going to be a different world. It's going to be a totally different world. So those who have the opportunity, again, sometimes there are external factors, sometimes there's parental pressure, there are financial, okay, so you have to look at case by case. But those who are able to stay Shana Bet, who have that wonderful opportunity, it's a valdik, it's meridik, it's a wonderful opportunity. Those, if you've already stayed for Shana Bet, then hopefully then you have to ask the next question. So what should I do? I don't know if I started offering Shana Gimel, I don't know if that's, Yeah, okay, so again, so for many people that's not an option. Okay, so I understand, I hear where they're coming from. And if a person has the opportunity to come to a place like YU, Makom Torah, and to be able to get a wonderful education and have a shir every day, have a seder every day, have a chavrus, have a beis medrash, versus the secular college, between you and me, I don't see what the havamin is, what the question is. I said, if a person, as part of an expression of Avodas Hashem, a person wants to be in a Makom Torah, a person wants to learn, to be able to continue his Limud HaTorah. So, Lefini is Dike, I think it's not even a question in terms of competition. And I say that not because I work for YU, not because YU paid me to come, they didn't pay me to come here, they just told me to come here, but not because I'm representing YU. I'm saying this from the, I would say this if I didn't work for YU. I said, if you have a chance to learn and to go to college, rather just to go to college, and I don't see the shyly.
So that's another, I guess, random question. A serious random question.
Sure.
No, I'm not saying that was
a, no. I'll try to give you a serious random answer if I can.
So the Rav mentioned a lot about Avodas Hashem.
It's a big thing. That's why I don't work for YU, I really work for Kadosh Baruch Hu, so I have to talk about my boss.
That's the
life question. I said a person has, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us wonderful opportunities. He gave us the Limud HaTorah and he gave us mitzvahs. So the more we do, the greater of the Hashem we are. I keep on doing it. I keep on doing it. Keep on davening, keep on learning, keep on doing mitzvahs, keep on thinking about these things, keep on, you know, there's so many things in the world that are pulling at us from all directions. I said, we live in a generation, you guys, I'm already out of the generation, I'm ready for the old dog. But you guys live in a generation where I think you have more distractions from Avodas Hashem in the course of one day than your great-great-grandfathers had during their entire lifetime. I said, we know what the distractions are, we know exactly what shape and form they come in, usually they look something like this, and sometimes a little bit bigger, sometimes a little bit smaller, but the basic story, there's so many different. See, I have such a gnaw to walk around with my BlackBerry in Eretz Yisrael. I'll tell you why. Because it doesn't work in Eretz Yisrael. I can't get reception. And I'm so excited. So you may wonder, so why do I wear it? If it doesn't work, why do I wear it? So I wear it for two reasons. There's a practical reason, and then there's a real reason. The practical reason is, even though I can't get reception, but nice, I still got all my info, I got all my phone numbers on it, so I'm going to have to pull out my little Israeli half-broken phone over here that usually doesn't work anyway. So I have to pull this out. At least I have all my American numbers on it to call. But the real reason why I wear it is I get such hanah to look at it and to see, Baruch Hashem, it doesn't work. It's gevaldik, it's meridik. So Rabbi Sai, it's the distractions. You got to overcome the distractions. You have to overcome it. It's so many different shapes and forms they come at. overcome the distractions, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is waiting by the door. He's waiting for you. You know, sometimes, like I'm in the middle of Seder or something, or the Shia, whatever it is. So sometimes, depending on the context, I'm a Rav, so I have to be available all the time. You know, sometimes there's emergency shots, and sometimes really have to talk to me. So you know, sometimes when I see the phone ringing, I recognize that it's not such an important phone call. I realize it's not so important. So if I don't pick it up necessarily, I know it could wait. So I think to myself, no, you know, it's not right. After all, the person's calling. But I know the person is. I know they don't need me. I know it can wait for an hour. So sometimes I think, wow. I said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also calling me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calling me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is calling me. Yisha Nikneis B'Kesh Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also knows what to say. So I'm hanging up in the Rebbeinu Shalom to go talk to some guy who I know is a nudnik who doesn't really need me anyway. So because I know that there's some seers is calling me to tell me that my washing machine is broken or fixed up. I know the way. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also calling me at the same time. So Rebbe said, give HaKadosh Baruch Hu at least as much covet as you give all the nourishing distractions that you get during the course of the day.
Spoken about paramount nature of the Minchat Tefillah, obviously going into the metaphor of our constant Lord Hashem, even in times that are not so extraordinary. So, how do you suggest that a Talmud such as us, in learning Yeshiva, are able to grasp onto that Hizuk on a day-to-day basis, Lamaisa, in order to really get the most out of that?
Right. The best way to do it is to do it. That's the best way to do it. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu built into the Torah an unbelievable koach of Habavah Tar Messiah Nassau. That if a person wants and a person tries, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing over you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pulling you. He's just waiting for you to make that little step. That's all. So every step you make, the Chazal say, Pischuli Pesach Chudash Shabachat, open up the hole like a little bit. Don't worry, the washing machine will wait, it'll wait, it'll wait. You open up the hole just a little bit, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will open up the world for you. You see it in your own life, I'm sure you see it. When you came here, you shut out, shut a bet. Should I give him a word? What do you say? Give him? Okay. So you see, look, could you imagine, a year ago, you weren't necessarily sitting and shtagging and sitting in the basement of Shom Valayla, right? I don't know what you were doing. I'm sure you were a good boy. But you see what unbelievable opportunities. You see how HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps those who want to come and make the chizuk and make the commitment. So keep up the good work. Whatever you're doing, keep on doing it right.
How much effort does Rav believe that a Jew in this door should make to move to Eretz Yisrael?
How much a person should make? It's a wonderful thing to move to Eretz Yisrael. Those who are able to live in Eretz Yisrael, mamish tov aleichem brocha. It's a wonderful, it's the dream. It should be the ultimate goal of every Jew. There are other things also that sometimes come up. There are sometimes parental considerations, very real halachic issues that come up in terms of parental conflicts in living in Eretz Yisrael. Not this forum right now, the Paschal and the Shaila. There are other issues, there are other family commitments, sometimes there are financial commitments, sometimes there are ruchnius commitments, sometimes a person is able to have a certain hashpah and chutz la'aretz that he may not have as much in Eretz Yisrael. There are a lot of factors that go into making the decision properly. But to say that it's not the goal, that's not the dream for everyone, of course it should be the goal for everybody. Avad it should be.
So Rav mentioned something about Isara and how it's a kind of davening. And there was an article that went out last week that Rav Wilson, I think from New York, Brooklyn, he gave a speech about how like this whole thing by Iran and everything on, and like said something about like maybe Mashiach might coming.
Is that Mashiach is definitely going to come? When is he going to come? I don't know.
This whole thing leading up to like speedy arrival. It's like Mashiach. Like this whole thing leading up to the speedy arrival, imminent arrival of Mashiach.
We are required. Fun of Kari Amuna is that we are required to both believe in Bias Mashiach and to be mechaka, to eagerly await the coming of Mashiach. At any given moment, the Rambam writes, that's part of our basic tradition, is that we have to believe the Mashiach will come at any given moment. When that given moment is going to be, when he comes, we'll know that he came. But to us to try to spend time to speculate when that's going to come, so is usually not the most productive thing to do. So therefore we should just believe that when the Shleiman is going to come, and we hope and pray it'll be, I thought right now, before Mincha even, we hope and pray, but we'll figure out whether we'd have Mincha here, we'll go to the coast, or we'll have a lot of decisions to make. Okay, we'll have to figure out how to do the end of why you may have to cancel the post-Pesach program. We've got a lot of changes to do. But I don't know, Jonathan, you may be out of job. You know, when Mashiach comes, it may be a whole different, why you have to read. That's right. You have enough room in gross, I don't know. It may have a whole different setup. So maybe you better make this, we'll figure out all the details. Okay? That's how we should approach it.
I was asked once recently by a Baal Tshuva. He got a psak
to wait 3 hours before meeting up.
Okay.
And he's a real Ben Torah, and he heard that, you know, it's really not ideal. He doesn't have a minhag, any real minhag. And he wants to know, should he now, he's ready to makabel six.
He should. The Shach writes that the first one is a Recha Torah, so we should be seeking six. Those who have a specific family tradition of three from generations to generations, okay, so they could continue to follow their family tradition. But if a person doesn't have that tradition, so it would appear that most of the poskim accepted the view of six, which is around the Rambam of six.
What would the Rav recommend as a way to learn halacha, learn the boys don't have a lot of a large body of knowledge? Halacha is more, a lot of wisdom. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch gives a heck of is a better style than Shaguru, which is going to be slower.
Yeah, you know, there are different styles in terms of learning halacha. It really depends ultimately what a person's goal is and how much time a person has. You know, if a person has a lot of time and he really wants, you know, kind of wants to become a posek, so I'd say neither of those two approaches. I'd say you got to learn the Gemaras and learn the Bezeisim, the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch. You know, that's one approach to learning halacha. A person's not going to go that route, but he just wants to be able to know what to do on a daily basis. So then obviously he has to turn to some of the kids of Svarim. So the question is, you know, which particular one? There are different ones. There are wonderful Svarim in Hebrew, wonderful Svarim in English. You know, it's hard for me to say which one is better. Some people would like to learn Hilchos Shabbos or the Shemir Shabbos and Chosa. Some will like to look at Rabbi Ribiyat if you have a lot more time. Again, they're yesh v'yesh. But it's important. It's very, very important. A person should be, has to know how to keep the mitzvahs. Because doesn't know how to keep the mitzvahs, you got a big problem. So of course the person should try to grow as grounded as possible.
Grandchild of the Rosh Yeshiva's question. So you're the son of your father was a Bashiva and got the Pesach for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the son, and should you feel obligated to go by your father, or?
I don't think you're obligated to keep 3 hours. I mean, I think if you want to, even a real Yaki wants to volunteer to keep 6 hours, we assume that's okay. They say that, you know, as the time goes on, there are going to be less and less people keeping 3 hours, because if you think, even within the German community, so just the demographics are such, any girl who comes from those German families is most probably going to marry somebody out of that community, and if that's the case, she's going to lose the minhag of 3 hours. And even within the boys, so a lot of the boys go off to different yeshivas and they become pick up other minhagim and other chumras and other shittas. So a lot of even the German boys end up with 6 hours. So again, there are still plenty of people still will keep 3 hours. No, it's not true. Okay, I didn't say everybody. I said many. I said there are still yakis who keep 3 hours. There probably will always be at BSGL and plus. But the numbers, just the sheer numbers, demographics, have already been pointed out by others before me that the numbers are much less than they were in the past. Okay. All right, if we're ready for Mashiach to come, it's Tavimcha, okay, a lot of things in the next couple of minutes. Okay, good.
Talking about the jump.